Good afternoon, folks. Welcome to After Hours, where authors go to unwind. I'm Tim Mendes, and today I am joined by fellow scribe, Christopher Murray Holtman. How are you doing, mate? Hey, yeah, I've got mine here. My very funky tankard. Yeah.
Yeah. I wish I had one too. Actually, I've been looking at, back in the day, I was looking to get one.
Yeah.
Like from Clarecraft Design, which is over, somewhere in England. I don't know. They do only Discworld stuff.
I know them, yeah. I know them.
But
I've got loads. I've got loads of tankards and things like that. I used to go to a lot of medieval reenactments and that kind of stuff. I used to do pirate reenactment as well, golden age of piracy. I was actually in a pirate band.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which was fun. Now, you just showed me a minute ago that you're actually drinking one of my favorite beers.
Yes. Not sponsored, but shout out to Blue Moon.
Oh, I love that stuff. I love it. I first discovered it in of all places, an Irish pub. Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I've no idea why it was in an Irish pub, but...
And I think it's made in Milwaukee.
Yeah,
which is where my family hails from where we come from.
Dharma country.
Yeah. We come from Racine, which is about half an hour south of Milwaukee.
Right. Is that in the woods?
No, that's not in the woods.
It's not the wood bit. Right.
Cool. It's a harbor town. So it's right on Lake Michigan.
Yeah.
And the area has kind of been in the news lately because Kenosha is like the neighboring town where that guy was shot.
Yeah. I think we've all seen that, haven't we? Yeah.
Yeah. So my, a lot of work, nothing has come to Racine yet, but I mean, there's always a chance that it might migrate.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah. Isn't the wrestler, the Crusher, from around there?
Yes, he's from that area.
Because he was famous for carrying the keg on his shoulder, wasn't he?
Yes.
What is it, Mr. Saloon or something, which was a thing in Wisconsin, isn't it? It's like you have to be able to do the polka and run with a keg on your shoulder and stuff like that.
Polka music is well famous in the Wisconsin area, even, because they mentioned Kenosha in Home Alone. Because the polka band that she hitches a ride with in the end, the last kind of bit before she goes home.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen it since it came out. Yeah. So
John Candy is a polka band leader from that area.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's as soon as anybody says it, I just think of the polka. It's just one of them places, isn't it? You know?
Otherwise, when it comes to culture, Racine is only... really not, I mean, because it's a manufacturing town, so they like Johnson's Wax and everything like that.
Yeah.
But otherwise, cultural wise, it's Bird on a Wire with Mel Gibson and Goldie Hawn takes place in Racine. And
I've got that VHS tape somewhere.
Richard Gere's character in The Mothman Prophecies is from Racine, and it's only mentioned when the Mothman calls him on the phone.
Right. Because the thing is, Milwaukee. I mean, you've got Robert Bloch's from around there, isn't he?
Yes, actually, the Lovecraft had a lot of because.
Yeah, and August Derleth as well.
He came from. He was farther north in Sauk or Sauk City, so that's further north. But there was a lot of because Derleth was kind of like Bloch and all those guys kind of came in contact with Lovecraft through Derleth.
Yeah. Or the original circle, because Frank Belknap Long was around there as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, I'm thinking that he was, actually. Mm. I'm not really sure, but there's a...
And then you had the Texas contingent. You had Robert E. Howard and Lynn Carter down in Texas, didn't you?
Yeah. And then, of course, you have the people from, there are a couple of English people, too.
Yeah.
We talked about that in our our pre-Lovecraft roundtable chat that was not recorded, but it should have been.
It was a good laugh. It's a shame one of our participants couldn't make it, could he? But we'll definitely be doing it again.
Absolutely. Ramsey Campbell is who we were talking about.
Yeah. He was like my local guy because he's from Merseyside. actually the Cheshire side of Merseyside. So yeah.
The only thing I know about Merseyside is that this train doesn't stop at Merseyside, which is a song by Ian Prowse.
Oh, right.
He was in a band called Pelay and Amsterdam.
Right. That's what I'm diving. If you want to know about Merseyside, Ramsey Campbell did a spoof of Lovecraft's Fungi from Yuggoth. He did it with his like Brychester mythos, the same way, called Mushrooms from Merseyside, and it's all humorous limericks. It's great fun. In fact, you've got didn't you show me last time? You've got the Visions from Brychester.
Yes,
it's in the appendices at the back.
Oh, okay.
It's one of the curios in the back, along with like some early drafts and stuff. It's well worth it. Well worth a read. Yeah.
Yeah, because I've only read the Glackey story in it because Ramsey Campbell told me to buy the book. And I said, I wrote him a letter because I'm working on, I have a work in progress, which is like a young adult horror fiction set in Wisconsin. And my idea was that I wanted a Lovecraftian character. An elder thing, an elder god, and I didn't want to steal any of Lovecraft characters. So I took something that was similar to what I needed and came across Glackey, and then I just sent an email to Ramsey Campbell asking, hey, is it okay if I, you know, plagiarize your slug?
And I love Glackey, he's great.
And he said, it's fine, but you need to read Visions from Brychester first, because that is kind of like how I wrap up the whole Glackey story.
Yeah, Last Revelations is great.
Yeah.
Really good saying, one.
Like, so, and that might change the way you want to portray.
Well, obviously you're going to need to read the first one, the first Glackey one, which was Inhabitants of the Lake.
Yeah, I bought that from Dark Region Press. I think they have like a reprint, or if they...
Yeah, I mean, I've got the drugstore Indian ones, which the same as your Visions of Brychester, with the French flaps. Beautiful books. Yeah,
I think the Visions from Brychester is from maybe Orbit or something. I'm not really sure.
It's the same cover as the one I've got, but then again, we got different publishers over here to what you will have over in Sweden.
No, this one was purchased from England, actually.
All right.
Yeah. Because Sweden doesn't have that much for indie. I mean, publishers that publish books in English. I mean, it's in English, so
yeah,
that's what I prefer to read. So
yeah. Well, it was originally written in English, so it's going to sound. That's how I always kind of see it. I mean, it's like films. I hate films with dubbing. I would rather hear the right language and read a subtitle, because nothing kills it more for me than really badly dubbed films. It's like some of the like the Italian Gallo films, like Dario Argento and all that. Yeah. Some of the dubbing in that stuff is atrocious. And Zombie Flesh Eaters is another one. It's just like...
I don't understand the Italian way of doing things, and even the German way of doing things, because they were... Yeah. I mean, even Italian movies are poorly dubbed in Italian.
Yeah.
They have like one actor who is handsome, and then they have one actor who has a good voice, and that's kind of like what they do.
Yeah, I mean, I've noticed that. Yeah, I've noticed that it is.
I remember talking to somebody about the Germans dub everything. That's basically what they do.
And I guess it all sounds really weird, doesn't it? It sounds like it's been recorded inside a tin can. Yeah. it's all muffled.
Yeah. During a period in the 80s, they tried to stop the dubbing. They wanted to do the original voices. But I guess the women, especially when it came to like Mel Gibson movies, they didn't find that Mel Gibson's real voice was sexy enough.
I can see that. That's brilliant.
The weirdest thing that I've ever seen when it came to dubbing is I stayed in Estonia, in Tallinn, many years ago. I love Estonia. I just find that that's a wonderful country to visit.
It's somewhere that's on my to-visit list.
Yeah.
I've done quite a lot of Eastern Europe and all that, but that's one I've never been to.
Tallinn is amazing. We went to Riga too later, but that's a lot like old Russian. Like Estonia is kind of like its own entity. And that's kind of amazing. But we were watching Estonian TV at the hotel, as you do.
And, of course. Yeah.
And we found that they also dubbed some things, they dubbed, not everything, but they dubbed TV shows and movies as well in Estonian. But they only had two actors. So one did all the female voices and one did all the male voices.
did they put a load of silly voices like that to try and make them different?
Obviously, we don't know Estonian. So it sounded like basically they just narrated what the people were talking about.
Right. So it sounded like more like an audio book than a film. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was horrendous, actually. Yeah. But
that's tickled me, that, for some reason. I can just imagine it. It must be like when I'm doing the live reading things and I've got different, like more than one person speaking, and I have to alter my voice slightly, or it just sounds like the same person talking. And there was one I did a while ago which had like several characters, and I found myself putting on even more ridiculous accents and all this kind of stuff.
And I've done that as well sometimes when I've read stuff, because I'll do what in for for my work, because I'm a teacher, and sometimes you have students that have dyslexia or whatever, and then we're tasked to find the audio version of it. Well, in the more advanced courses in Swedish and in English, I'll usually use stuff that, well, some Black Hair Press stuff, some other stuff. That stuff isn't available in audio form. So I read it and record it, and I put it up on a Google Drive. Now, maybe I'm just screwing myself when it comes to like copyright infringement and stuff like that. But then I'll find that I'll do voice.
I'm sure Dean wouldn't mind. Hi, Dean.
I'll do voices as well, but I'll also oftentimes forget what the original voice was. So when I'm reading, I usually read it in one sitting, and in the end, I'm just like, I don't remember what this person sounded like.
So all your characters end up with multiple personality disorder.
Which wouldn't be odd for a Black Hair Press story.
No, it really wouldn't. It really wouldn't. No. They've accepted some of the craziness that comes out of here, so... Yeah, the audiobooks thing's interesting, because when I did that reading as part of the Erie River presentation on Sunday, and a couple of people actually have contacted me and said that I should do audiobook narration, because apparently I've got a clear delivery and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Erie River are bringing out audiobooks, and that is something I'm really interested in to hear, because I imagine that their voice actor is... because they're Canadian. So I'm assuming that the voice actor is going to be either Canadian or American.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how well my stories are going to translate in a different, to a different thing, because my stuff is very British.
I don't know how the audiobook world works either. I've also heard that I had a good voice and a good voice for audiobooks, but I've never been contacted. I've never been given, nobody's offered me a job as an audio voiceover person. And I think most of the times people want to go just with somebody that they know as a professional has done it before.
Yeah. So
they
know. Yeah. Yeah.
I think my favorite audio reader is a guy named Stephen Pacey. He's a British musical artist from the beginning. I think the only thing I really know that he's done musical-wise was the short-lived musical version of Jeeves and Wooster by Jeeves that Andrew Lloyd Webber put out.
I love Jeeves and Wooster.
Me too. Jeeves is an absolutely excellent, for anybody who likes Jeeves and Wooster or Woodhouse, but if you like cats, you're not going to like Woodhouse. I'm sorry, but no. I mean, and I think it is because it's so British.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was raised on Woodhouse and raised on Fry as my Woodhouse or Jeeves and Wooster.
Well, I've actually got the box set of that over here. I actually watched it not long ago, and it coincided when I was watching it with the Black Hair Press. They did the 2020 anthology, which was all stories set in the 20s. And my story, What the Butler Saw, is my answer to the question that nobody ever asked: what if Woodhouse and Lovecraft had collaborated?
There you go.
So there you go.
I love that. And I think, Pacey is so good because he will create very believable, but I think it's because he's a musical artist. I think he puts out very believable voices, and he also remembers what their voices are supposed to sound like. That's always a positive in a voice actor.
Yeah, well, my accents tend to slip. I tend to start off a sentence with it there, like, "Oh, how are you doing, me lover?" And by the end of it, I'm back talking like this, you know.
So I find it difficult to remember, because obviously, if you just read it, you know, by the seat of your pants, you don't know what the story is like, and you don't know who's saying what. So I've been caught continuing with one voice when it's actually somebody else speaking.
Right. Yeah.
And that becomes really
strange. I've only done my own stuff so far, but I am doing something. I am doing some stuff for somebody else. I might actually be recording it in a bit. I can't really say too much about it, but that's going to be interesting, because I did give it a read, but obviously it's not written to the same rhythm that I speak.
No.
Because, I think every author, the way they write is dictated by how they talk. Because, to a degree. If you use a certain type of phrasing in your daily life, it's going to come through in your work, isn't it? I just think that's the standard.
I've realized that most of my work, and at least the way people, my characters speak and the way they think, is very sarcastic. They're very, they have a very sarcastic tone all the time.
Yeah, same with me. But that comes from the love of Jeeves and Wooster and British humor, because we are the sarcastic.
Because I mean, when I started reading, the first books that I really remember reading, apart from like Enid, Blyton and stuff like that, which was by how I fell in love with like fantasy and I guess horror, which is kind of like what he mixes. I mean, the first things I remember reading are Masefield, I think it's The Midnight Folk and Box of Delights.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
they're from the 20s.
It's ringing a bell now.
And Graham Greene and Woodhouse, and they all kind of characters have that kind of sarcastic tone and very much like inner monologue that you find.
You see it again, like say about the horror, you see it in that. I mean, Campbell is incredibly sarcastic. Arthur Machen, the old Welsh wizard himself, his stuff is loaded with satire and sarcasm.
Yeah,
I mean, I love the episodic novel he did, The Three Imposters.
No, I actually haven't read that. I think the last thing I can remember reading must have been The Wendigo, right? He wrote The Wendigo, right?
No, that was Algernon Blackwood.
Okay, that's Blackwood. Yeah. Okay,
which same era, same kind of thing. He again, very sarcastic. The Wendigo is great. Great God Pan is Machen. Yeah, one of my favorite books. I love that. I'd actually read that as a kid, and I was just like mind blown by it, because I'd never read anything like it. And it was from that I discovered Lovecraft and Clark Ashton Smith and people like that.
I do have a little bit of a hard time with Clark Ashton Smith, actually. I'm not really
Some of it sure. is very, very purple.
Well, I mean, I really wanted to like House on the Borderlands, but it just doesn't. There's something and I don't know what it is. I might have to revisit it, and I might have been too young when I read it.
The thing but is, with Smith, you're better off with his short stuff. And I mean, because a lot of his Hyperborea stuff is great, but I prefer his mythos stuff.
Yeah,
which you could get in the I mean, if you just want to read that, I mean, the Chaosium, you know, their cycle books they do.
Yeah,
they did. The Clarkishton cycle. It's all of his mythos stuff. It's great. Well, it's not so much the Hyperborea stuff. It's the Zothique stuff that he did. It just goes in one eye and out of the other. I just can't. For some reason, I can't process it.
No, it's the same. I mean, it's the same with Lovecraft. I mean, I do love Lovecraft's Elder God stuff and the Cthulhu cycle and his more like general horror stuff.
Yep.
But I tend to have a difficult time with his
more Dreamland
stuff. Yeah. Those are
some of it. For me. Yeah, some of it. The later ones in the Dreamlands thing, like Silver Key and Dream Quest, which carry on the Randolph Carter story, they're great. But Polaris and The Strange High House in the Mist. The thing is, I'm not a fan of Lord Dunsany.
No, me neither. I do, and with Smith, I so wanted to love Dunsany, and I bought Gods of Pangaea.
Pagana, I did the same thing.
and it's still on my shelf, and I think I read maybe 4 or 5 pages.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't know.
I can't get into it.
No.
But, I just can't get into it. So I've given it my partner. She collects fantasy novels and all that. It's like, here you are. Do you want that? A gift. It's just like,
it's crazy. I mean, I was going to say about sarcastic writers. I mean, I really love M.R. James.
Yes.
I mean, next to Lovecraft, M.R. James must be my favorite horror writer.
Right.
And he's unbelievably sarcastic. And I believe that in a lot of my writing, when the author or me as a narrator or the author, I'll often make comments.
Yeah.
Like M.R. James will do. It's like when I remember, I think it's The Mezzotint. When they talk about golfing.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
He mentions that the characters are going to talk about golf, but I don't want to bore anybody.
Brilliant. Yes. The other thing with the sarcasm is I tend to do it all the time and not even notice I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. I don't even realize I'm doing it because it's just so much part of how it's like, I'm as well as Woodhouse, I'm a huge... I grew up on the Carry On films, you know, and all that, and Hammer Horror. So that ends up in my stories, you know, and I sometimes end up with like the absurdities of like Kafka as well. And it's just because it's stuff that I read or watched when I was a kid that's been assimilated somehow. Yeah. Speaking of your books, you've got just had one out, haven't you?
Yes, I just released my first... my first book was the first book that is released. I wouldn't say it's not the first novel that I've ever written, but it's the first book.
First one. Yeah. I've got the same thing. I've got 2 novellas coming out later this year, but I've got like 4 before that that I wrote before. And they've been out for submission for about 8 years now. Not so long, you know, they've just been out. I mean, sometimes novella submissions and novel submissions can just take an age, man.
And I think I was lucky in this case because I sent it to... The deal was that once it was done, and I actually had it professionally edited, I paid for the editing cost. And once I got it back, actually it was laying around for a while before I even did anything with it. Drew Starling was actually the one that kind of... Well, apart from my wife said, you know, we've paid for it to be professionally edited. That's not a small fee in any as any indie writer knows, and a lot of indie writers choose not to do it because the fees are so high.
Well, I can't afford it at the minute, It's something I will do further down the line when I can afford it. It's not at the minute.
And to be fair, I mean, we were in the process of taking out a loan for something else at the time that we needed to be done with a house or whatever it was. And we just, like, you know, throwing in that grand scheme of things, it was a small sum.
Yeah.
So just add those, you know, that money to the pot, and we'll use that money to, you know, it's an investment.
Of course it is, yeah. It's like advertising as well, isn't it? It's all these things that need to be done. But the thing is, I'm trying to learn how to do as much of them myself as possible. Yeah. Because basically I haven't been in work since 2012. Because I developed a spinal condition, which took my legs out. And while I'm fine a lot of the time, I get chronic pain in them. And some days I can't walk. And some days I can't use this hand. You'll notice that I do that a lot. It's because I've got no feeling in my fingertips. Which isn't great when you're a chef and you've got knives. You know? Yeah, so, I mean, I struggle by at the minute.
There are tools that you can use. I think Pro Writing Aid, which I invested in and had for a couple of years before I let it lapse and just never, you know,
continue
the subscription. That is an awesome tool for writers.
Which one's that?
Pro Writing Aid is
I've never heard of it.
No. A lot of people use Grammarly.
I do.
Grammarly is fine, but Pro Writing Aid, I must say, and we're not being sponsored by Pro Writing Aid in any
or Blue Moon.
and it's just great because what it does is it doesn't only check your grammar, but it also checks the passive voice. It checks stickiness of your text. It also checks off your pacing.
Yeah. In the tech, to be honest, they've just added all that to Grammarly.
Yeah. But Pro Writing Aid works with Scrivener, which is the program I use to write.
Right.
And it saves everything in Scrivener, so I don't have to export it to anything. Right.
Now, see, I use OpenOffice. So, yeah. So, yeah, I have to copy and paste, but it's not exactly difficult. So.
And Scrivener was also an investment that I did.
Yeah.
And luckily enough, there was a 50% sale for anybody who had been part of National Novel Writing Month. So I just jumped at that. So
nice. Yeah.
You didn't even have to complete a novel. It was just, if you'd been part of it, you got it. So what happened was I had the story laying on the shelf because in actuality, I never thought that the novel would ever want, I didn't think anybody would want it. Because it's kind of odd.
Well, I think that about pretty much everything I write. I've got a massive inferiority complex, and I just can't believe that people appreciate any of the crap that comes out of my head.
Yeah, and I get that, and I struggle with that too. But what this story was like where does this belong? You know, where could it find a home? Because on the one hand,
I read the blurb on it. It calls it like a shoot 'em up crime kind of caper thing.
Yeah. And that's really not what it is.
Oh, right. I was going off the Breaking Rules website. I did my homework, you see. Yeah.
Created a blurb that will get as many people in.
Of course.
And in one way that is what it is. It's a crime story with noir overtones about a detective that, you know, there's a massacre and he has to try to solve it. And there's several massacres where not only do you have like a crime family or a criminal organization that he's trying to get to the bottom of who they are or who it is. He only has the name of it. At the same time, there's a vigilante that is like seemingly doing the same thing. Mm. But they don't know what it is. They don't know if it's another crime family or then they don't know, or if it's somebody trying to help the police. But the thing is that this vigilante actually is, he's kind of like a Batman figure, but he has a mask.
Yep.
And the mask is, as it says in the blurb, it's the terrible mask of fear, but it actually has magical powers. It's imbued with magical powers.
Oh, that cool.
Those who are evil will be, you know, it's actually based on The Face. Have you ever heard of The Face?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, it's an old 20s superhero.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And it's actually stolen straight from The Face.
Yeah, so Fallout did it. Did a pastiche of it with the Silver Shroud, didn't they?
In one of the Fallout
video games. Yeah.
And so that's kind of like, and that's what kind of made it odd. So the character from the beginning, which is Tony Hill, he is a radio host that was raised in Bali during the Second World War. His father was a cultural attaché. His mother dies in tuberculosis, and the father becomes, you know, an alcoholic, and leaves the child to his own devices, his son, Tony, who then is raised by Balinese warriors.
Nice.
And
nice.
That's kind of how he becomes, you know, he gets
badass
strong.
Badass vigilante type, yeah.
Yes, he can use the weapons. And then as it progresses, obviously, Bali is part of the whole, I mean, they're run by the Dutch from the beginning, and then the Japanese come in and take over, and the Dutch take, and the Japanese leave, the Dutch take over again. So there's all these things. And during that point in time, his adoptive father hands him this mask, the mask of Rangda, which was the queen of the Layaks, which is a demonic vampire creature whose head would leave its body at night and go and suck the blood of people. So
that sounds great.
So when I was done. And I felt like, well, I'm just going to self-publish this.
Yeah.
Because no way a publisher is going to want this book. Not because it's poorly written or because
it doesn't fit anywhere. Yeah.
It's just like, who would want to have because the age of Dickens and Carr and supernatural detective stories is kind of over.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing is, breaking rules are very diverse in what they take.
Yeah.
Because that's the problem I have with some of my stuff, because some of it doesn't fit anywhere. So you get all these anthology calls for horror or dark fantasy or things like that. And I've got this thing over here. So where the hell am I going to put it? Just keep throwing it until somebody picks it up.
Yeah, and that's the problem, because you have publishers that you would say, and I was, that's what I was thinking too, because there are publishers that I was kind of like, I had my eye on.
Mm-hmm.
Angry Robot Books, which is from England.
Yeah.
They do a lot of Tim Wagner stuff, and if you want balls to the wall crazy shit, then Tim Wagner is your man.
Yes.
But they don't take, they only have, they have like a window of a month.
Yeah, a lot of them do. A lot of them do.
Where they take new authors.
Especially over here. Especially, yeah. I mean, because the indie publishing scene over here is kind of about that big.
Yeah.
It's tiny. It's ridiculous because, I mean, I was published in the US, Canada, New Zealand, and Australia, right? Over a year, well, coming up to a year. And I only recently got accepted into a British publication, which is madness, really, you know.
And it's the same, because I had my eye on Crystal Lake Publishing.
Yeah.
I've
got my eye on them for something as well, yeah.
Yeah. But now that window was closed, because they had an opening. It was like, this is like the first opening we've had in 8 years. But I mean, they still have calls. They have calls still for their own.
It's I keep getting I'm cursed, because every time one of the windows opens up, yeah. one of the things is already out for submission somewhere.
Yeah.
Or I just have it, or I haven't got something that's quite the right length. No.
Length part is often what screws me off. I can have a perfectly good story, but then it's too long or it's too short.
I'm too long always. It's like I struggle with. I can't. It's like drabbles and things like that. I've done a couple, but I can't wrap my head around them. It's just I mean, you can hear me. I talk a lot, and that and I'm a complete pantser as well. I never plan, so no. I just start writing, and before I know it, it's a novelette when it was supposed to be a 500 word flash piece.
I mean, and I'm totally the same way. I mean, I try to plan. I've had like stories, like I said, okay, this is the plan. This story I'm going to plan from the beginning to the end, but that never happens. That never happens. But the deal was, and I, another publisher that I had my eye on was Dark Region, but it doesn't, I have a hard time seeing that Dark Region actually, that they actually accept.
I don't think they accept unsolicited manuscripts. No, because I did a thing a while ago and I actually found some really quite useful guides to publishing houses, but so many of them don't take unsolicited manuscripts, which is a pain in the ass.
And I've sent into anthologies for Dark Region, been rejected, but I have one that's still out that I'm still waiting to hear back from.
Yeah, I have as well, actually.
Was there Survive the Night?
Yes, that's the same one. I'm still out for that. But that was kind of, wasn't there like a contest like bolted on to that as well?
It's the same. They call it a contest because they only have so many unsolicited authors that they take. And then they have...
That's like, what I thought, because I mean, to me, I was reading it. I was reading the guideline. And it was just like, well, that's just a normal anthology call. I don't understand why it's a competition.
No, and there's a lot of stuff about, I mean, we're not going to, say anything about Dark Region Press, but there are things that have been said about them. I find them to be perfectly fine.
I've never worked with them. No, never really. The only contact I've had with them is when I got the automated response email saying they'd received my manuscript. I've had with them.
Yeah, I've had some contact with Chris Morley, actually, the publisher. But if you listen to The Horror Show with Brian Keene, you can get a whole deep understanding of what they are. And I did, I mean, it's the same, because before I started actually submitting stuff, I did have a little bit of a bad experience. I think I dodged a bullet, because there was a publisher called Cheezine in Canada, run by a guy named Brett Savery. Brett Savery, I should say, has always been good to me. We've always had a really good relationship, cordial relationship. So I was a little bit surprised at what was happening. But Cheezin has been around for like 20 plus years. Him and his wife ran it. They've had a lot of, some of the books that came out on Cheezin. Absolutely stunning. Stellar work.
Right. I've never heard of them.
No. Ed Kurtz, amongst others. There is one that is really good that is kind of based on Slovakian mythology.
Nice.
A bunch of prizes. I'll let you know what it was, but it's a lot of stuff is really, really good. Gemma Files is a British author that writes.
I know Gemma Files, I'm a fan of hers.
Yeah, a lot of her.
I mean, a bunch of my Cthulhu mythos anthologies. Yeah. Like, she's in several of the Black Wings series and New Cthulhu 1 and 2.
And her book, Experimental Films, which is an awesome book, was published through Cheesy.
I'm going to be picking that up at some point. It's in my Amazon wish list.
Yeah, and you better do it quickly, because those Cheesing books are disappearing. Because
I'll do it next time I have an order then. Yeah. I'll do it next time.
Yeah. The company folded because of... poor being poorly managed, authors not getting paid, the publishers bad mouthing authors and stuff like that. So that was my first contact with the publishing world.
Right.
Well, because I couldn't understand why I wasn't getting any responses, because we actually were, they were kind of interested in something that I was doing, but they wanted me to finish it. And I interviewed him for my own podcast, actually.
Right.
And you can listen to that. And I mean, he seems like a stand-up guy there in his book, The Perfect Machine. Now, if you want a really good science fiction, balls to the walls, kind of action book, The Perfect Machine by Brett Severy is awesome.
All right, I'll check that out then. I mean, my first experience, I was quite lucky because my first publishing experience was with Natalie Brown. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't the first thing I was accepted for. It was like I had two acceptances in the space of a week, but the first one took about 6 months to come out. Because they had some internal problems, like one of the publishers had he was at university, he had some kind of thesis or something he had to do. Wow. So I mean, real life gets in the way sometimes, doesn't it? But Natalie Brown was the first person, because I was in Death and Butterflies, and that was a really, really good learning thing for me, because obviously I got invited onto the page.
Yeah.
And that was the first experience I had with other writers and publishers and stuff like that. And then from there, obviously, I had stuff accepted by Erie River and Black Hair. So I've had some really good experiences.
Yeah.
I've had a few that have not been that great, but on the whole, I've not had any problems as yet. So
yeah,
I've been quite lucky, I think.
The second experience I had was Erie River, Michelle River. And that's just been great, because I was in their first Drabble anthology.
Oh, right, yeah. Which one was that? Forgotten Ones?
Yeah. And that was actually my first experience getting accepted into an anthology. I mean, I had won, short story competitions.
Right.
But this was actually the first time I was accepted where a book actually, you know, came out, because I was actually, to be fair, I think I was accepted into Elizabeth River Press's 2020 annual, but I didn't know that at the time. I had sent a story in, I think probably in maybe September 2019, and it wasn't until I think maybe February, March that I found out that I was accepted.
Yeah.
So that was and that book didn't come out until July. So, I mean, Michelle River at Elizabeth River Press does in no way has the same like author group.
Right. Yeah. As
River does. But I mean, to go back to actually to Face of Fear, what happened was I had it all, you know, I had it all edited and stuff like that. I was going to self-publish it because I didn't believe anybody wanted it. My wife said, "Oh, why are you going to do that? You put all the money into it, you know, send it out." And I'm just like, well, and she hadn't read it. You know, she doesn't, she hadn't read it at all. And so she didn't know. Usually she's my beta reader.
Yeah, my partner's mine. Yeah, she's my beta reader, yeah.
And so she didn't really know the gist of it. And I said, like, I don't know if it's going to be accepted. And then I had an interview. I interviewed Drew Starling and we talked about it. And he just like, yeah, you know, you do what you want. I mean, your wife, you know, she has her opinion about that. But I think that, you know, do your thing. But I still somewhere deep inside, I think Drew kind of also, with my wife and Drew kind of, you know, saying two different things, but Drew was still saying, you know, give it a shot. I just like, yeah, I'll give it a shot. I'll polish it up.
You may as well, because you've got, what have you got to lose at the end of the day? I mean,
yeah,
we all get rejections. We all do. Absolutely. I mean, it's like, made me laugh a while ago, Zoe Zoltan, the writer, on the one of the Black Hair things, somebody was saying that they'd had something rejected. And Zoe posted up saying, yeah, being a writer and not expecting to get rejections is like being a boxer and not expecting to be punched in the face, which tickled me. That made me laugh.
I saw that. And I think that, and I know I talked to Dave Green about that as we were setting up our latest podcast, that he, that attitude that you see with some writers. Yeah. And I think that particular writer had that kind of attitude, mm-hmm. that it seemed like a lot of things, you know, were getting...
I mean, I just don't mention them. I don't mention my rejections. I mean, there's nothing to be gained by it, to be honest. I mean, what are you going to gain by it? I mean, I don't. I just, to be actually, I mean, the stories that have been rejected two or three times, they end up being some of my better ones because they've been through several different drafts. Because as soon as it comes back, I sort of go, right, there's obviously something not right with it. Let's give it another draft.
I just send it to somebody else.
Yeah, I do if they're ready. Yeah.
I usually don't, because usually what I get is it doesn't fit this anthology.
Same. I always get ones that say, we loved your story, but.
Yeah. And then I feel like, well, if then obviously, and I have gotten my share of comments where it says like, yeah, you maybe shouldn't have started the story this way. You know, some actual feedback.
But it's very rare. I've had feedback. Yeah.
But when you get that one, then I kind of like in my own mind feel, well, this is good enough to be sent somewhere else then.
Yeah.
But what happened was when I wrote a query letter, I had started interviewing several authors from Breaking Rules. That's how I got introduced to them. I think the first one I talked to was Aaron Lebold.
Oh, yes.
Who's a great guy, been through some shit, and you can tell that his writing really, really reflects that, and I think that's why it's so true. But I talked to him, just like when I think this author world is so great that way, because I asked him, do you have anybody else that you think I should interview? And he's just like, yeah, you can talk to Jennifer Gordon and Allison Hubbard.
Yeah.
So I had them on. So all of a sudden, I have this kind of like, I'm dipping into the Breaking Rules pool that Breaking Rules at that time, when I talked to Aaron Lebold, it was not a company that I was familiar with because they weren't making
anything. No. I mean, I found them, I found them completely by accident and sent something on spec just for one of their magazines. Mm-hmm. And Patty from Breaking Rules got back to me and was like, yes, love it. Yeah. Here's some other stuff you might want to send to.
And after this, I think I have some information for you about that stuff because I talked to them last week.
Oh, yeah.
About those, so I have some information for you that they wanted me to pass along to you.
Oh, cool.
So then I started looking at Breaking Rules and I'm just thinking like, it's so diverse.
Yeah.
And they're called Breaking Rules, and if anything, my story breaks the rules. So, and then at the same time, Crystal Lake had their open call, so I was just like, I'll send it out to both of them. I'll send it out to Crystal Lake and I'll send it out to Breaking Rules. Now Crystal Lake, they're opening in July 1st, I think they opened. So I actually sent it to Breaking Rules first, like 2 weeks in June. The two last weeks in June, somewhere around there, third week of June, I sent it in. Fourth week of June, I get a letter from Christopher Clausen Rule saying, you know what, we're accepting your story. Here's a contract.
They are incredibly quick.
I didn't even send three chapters. I sent the full manuscript.
Nice.
And so I didn't even have to send it to Crystal Lake. Because I signed it. I'm just like, I'm jumping on this deal. I'm not waiting to submit to Crystal Lake and then risk them rejecting, taking
this
back.
This is it. I mean, this is it. You've got somebody hands you the olive, somebody hands you the branch, you take it, don't you? Yeah. Cool. What I'll say now, while we're talking about it, for you peopleoids out there, if you want to get a copy of the book, you can get it on Amazon at getbook.app. Face of Fear. There you go. And that also is the rest of his stuff on Amazon is viewauthor.at/C_Mary_Holtman.
Yes.
And there is also this, which links to all of his other stuff.
Yeah, and I think it's like the my most well kept secret, or actually not so well kept secret, Linktree. I don't understand why people don't use it more, because oftentimes
when you
send stuff into an anthology, you can only use one. You know, some will say you can have one link of your choice. So why not have Linktree? Because if you go into Linktree, you'll find my Goodreads, my Amazon, my YouTube, if I had it, my podcasts, my personal webpage, my Twitter, my Facebook.
Nice. I'm going to look into it, because I've never heard of it. I've never heard of Linktree.
I think it was it Katie Bennett, maybe? That had a Linktree that I just like, what is that? And I clicked on it and it went to all these places. I'm getting that.
I've never heard of it. I mean, I've never seen it either until you, when I asked you about links today, that was the first I'd ever heard of it.
Yeah. And it's
but
like,
I'll definitely be looking into it, because it's a great idea.
Yeah. There's something called like All Author as well, which is,
that's
more like of a Goodreads page, and then you can highlight whatever.
Yeah, it's like Smashwords and BookBub and all that as well, isn't it? Yeah.
So I have one of those too. Just, you know, the more places you are, the better.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. Well, I've got all of them except Twitter and Instagram. I'm trying to hold off. I don't want Twitter. I really don't want it.
No, but I find that Twitter is a good way to, I mean, I think it's a good way to get out there without doing too much. I mean, I do Instagram as well, but I find it so tiring, because you have to put up a picture and you have to write something and you have to use hashtags. And in Twitter, you can just write something and put in a hashtag. I guess Instagram doesn't do exactly what I want it to do.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the functions that I want in a social media site.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I'm going to have to start wrapping it up in the next few minutes. But so have you got anything else coming out at the minute that you want to tell us about quickly?
I don't know if I have anything else. I mean, what you can do is you can go into my, go check out my podcast, WARG The Guild, which is kind of a part of.
It is indeed. Yeah.
Guild After Hours. And that's where I do all my author interviews. I've done some with, as I said, Brett Sowery, but also my biggest achievement was interviewing Peter S. Gable,
nice.
Or Beagle, who wrote The Last Unicorn.
Nice, yeah.
Awesome get, I would say. And I even, I've done some other people, though. So there's a lot of people to talk to, a lot of indie authors, obviously.
Yeah.
And it's all about the craft of writing. Otherwise, I basically have book. I think everything that I have coming out, you have coming out as well.
Yeah, we are in a lot of the same things. Yeah, it's like every book you look at the back of it, and it's got you, me, Chris Hewitt, David Green, and Joel,
and then Brown as well.
Yes, that Natalie. Yeah.
So basically you can just go on my, otherwise I have sent a dark fantasy story to out to a couple of publishers, hoping that they'll pick that up, and I actually have something I have something else kind of big, but that's not coming out until 2021, so I'm have to hold off on that, because
I'm in a few projects that are, well, one of them with you.
That one
it's really, it's frustrating, isn't it, because it's really, really cool. Really, really cool. But we can't talk about it.
No. But the plan is that once it gets we can talk about it, we're going to have a podcast series where we interview talk like author on tape about the stories.
Me and David have come up with a couple of that I'm going to be doing a couple of promotional things as well. But again, I can't tell you about them. I can tell you about them, but not the people.
No, right. Exactly.
We're rapidly running out of time here. But thanks for coming on, mate. I mean,
it was a wonderful time.
Yeah, we'll do it again. It's like, yes. I need to do part two with David Green. I need to do part two with you. So an hour just isn't long enough.
Me and Dave at the same time.
That would be fun, actually. I could do that. We could do that.
Yeah. Check out me if you want to hear me and Dave ramble on about books. Then you have Easing the Reader, which is our Wheel of Time reread as well.
I meant to have a look at that because he told me about that last time, but I completely forgot about it until just then.
Yeah, cool. No, it's getting a lot of traction already, actually, and some shout-outs from the Wheel of Time community, so that's kind of cool.
Nice. Well, yes, if you want to keep up to date with what I'm up to, it's timmendyswriter.wordpress.com. And as you know, this is a series, and you're probably watching on YouTube now, so if you are, hit subscribe and like. If you want to comment, I will answer them. I'm sure he'll probably answer them as well. And also, this will be going out as an audio on the podcast.
Yes.
Which is part of this man's guild podcasty thing.
Yes, exactly. After Hours, you can check it out there. You want to listen? And I added some pub noises. I don't know if you've listened to it, but there's pub noises in the background.
I like it. I really like it. Yeah, I really liked it. Thought it was a great addition.
Yeah, and my brother wrote the music.
Yeah, which is great as well. Yeah. So what you need to get in there in the background for the truly British, authentic British feeling is somebody go, "Did you spill my pint?" And then a fight break out. Are you looking at my missus?
I mean, I think you want rabid soccer fans as well.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Screaming Chelsea in the background.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about right. Yeah. And then, hey, look, get in. Somebody walks in with the wrong team colours on.
Yeah.
I don't get it. You don't get that kind of crap with rugby. Well, you'd get it with football. And you'd think it'd be the other way around. But it's
really... I'm not a big football. I mean,
soccer I'm fan not.
At all, so.
I'm not. I don't get it. Years ago when I was working in a restaurant, I had to, there was a girl, you know, the stereotypical thing of women always having to ask their boyfriend what offside is.
Yeah, well, I assume, yeah.
I didn't know. I had to ask one of the waitresses. It's like, Jane, what the hell does offside mean?
No, a lot of my workmates are diehard football or soccer fans, and they love, you know, British teams. It's Liverpool this, Manchester this, or whatever. So, and I was just like, to be part of the circle, it's like, well, what is your team? And I'm just like, you know what? I'll just pick a team out of random. So now my team is Motherwell FC, the Steel Men. In the Scottish
League. You should go with my hometown, Macclesfield Town. Bottom of the bottom league.
Scunthorpe is...
Scunthorpe, yeah.
I think one of my favorite bands, I think The Levellers. I don't know, probably...
I love The Levs, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen them live many, many times. It seems like our music taste...
Very similar.
Because New Model Army and The Levellers is what I kind of grew up on as a teenager.
Same. I mean, I love New Model Army. I went to see them end of last year. I've seen them so many times. I used to follow them and The Mission. I used to follow them around the country. Yeah.
The Mission are my boys. Love The Mission.
Well, if you look on my Facebook, on the front bit, you know where you've got the selected photographs? Yeah. There's a photo of Wayne Hussey from The Mission with me in a headlock. because I was winding him up. It was an acoustic show. And me and my mates kept going down the front, and because obviously he was doing Mission stuff. And we kept asking for Sisters of Mercy songs and Dead or Alive songs as well, which is, so it was like, play First, Last, and Always. And he got the best one was Misty Circles, which was a song by Dead or Alive, Pete Burns, when he was the guitarist. And we go, Misty Circles. And he goes, Misty fucking circles.
But it was like, I went to go see Fish.
Last Marillion. Year. Yeah, I've seen Fish before. Yeah.
Yeah, love
Fish. One of my ex-girlfriends was a big fan.
Yeah. And people kept screaming Grendel at him, which was like their first like big single. But it's like a 15 minute song. And he's just like, I'm not playing Grendel. I'm not singing 15 minutes of a heavy prog classic on stage. Yeah. No, we're doing Clutching at Straws from beginning to end.
Yeah. So, yeah. Cool. Well, thanks, mate. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Indeed. I will no doubt speak to you very shortly. I should have this up in an hour or so. So it's pretty much ready to rock. It doesn't need any editing or anything like that. And I'll send you over the audio as well. Let me get that up. Yeah, so thanks very much, mate. I will be back in the next couple of weeks with another guest. Till then, take care. Where's the bloody... Yeah, see ya. I can never find the button. There it is.